There's the flute. You know what that means? It's Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I'm your host, Thomas Drance. Joined today by pinch hitter Dmitry Filipovich. Jamie, off for the day. We're only going for an hour, so from noon to 1 p.m., you're with Dmitry and I, and then I am flying out to Edmonton to cover a pair of big games that could decide the Pacific Division. Dmitry, before I ask you how you are, I'm going to pay the bills. This hour is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite with two of our favorite partners. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We're broadcasting, of course, from the Kintex studio, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? Dom really hates when I get into that one. Of course, you can interact with us over the course of the program by using the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber has three stores to serve you: in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver. Visit them online at dunbarlumber.com. Dmitry, how are you? Thanks for joining me today.
It's always a pleasure to be here in person, seeing your hosting chops flourish. Dan right? Murphy should be really concerned right now. You're gunning for his job.
The difference between me and Murph, and the reason I don't think he should sweat it, is that he's likable. That's the key difference.
No, I thought it was going to be the way you guys wear your suits, but
yeah, it's also the level of fitness and style. All right, let's open the whiteboard and then we'll get back to the banner.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
All right, Dmitry. So we do the whiteboard every day. It's a 25 to 30 minute rundown of everything Canucks fans need to know that's going on around their team. Thatcher Demko practiced on Thursday and spoke with the media for the first time since he was injured in that game against the Winnipeg Jets back on March 9th. Demko indicated over the course of a somewhat testy, but ultimately pretty ordinary interview with Vancouver Press that his plan has been to return in Calgary. That's been, you know, the Canucks have, it's their second to last game against the Calgary Flames. And that's been the time frame that Demko has been working toward this entire time, charting what he described as an aggressive return to play program. He wouldn't rule himself out, however, for Saturday versus Edmonton. We'll see how it plays out at morning skate. What are your thoughts? Does winning the division matter enough to deviate from a plan in the event that Edmonton wins tonight and is only 2 points back going into that game?
No. I mean, especially now, like, with the stakes here for Demko's health and what you're going to need from him, particularly considering, like, the other options in place that we've seen. Like, you need him at full health. And so that's all that really matters here.
All that really matters. We also saw Aiden Hill make his return from injury against the Oilers, and I if I'm the Canucks, I have no desire to replicate that particular script.
No, and we've seen, like, I'm curious to see how this plays out. You certainly want to get him at least one rep before we start the postseason, right? You don't want him coming in completely cold. We've seen Freddie Anderson missed an extended period of time in Carolina, came back and just looks fresh and phenomenal. Kevin Mulde's been talking about this. Semyon Varlamov is starting a lot for the Islanders right now and is so much fresher because he's only played like 20 games this season. So I think this is like a legitimate luxury, assuming there's no risk of re-injury. Like, I think the rest versus rust here for a goalie is significantly favored towards like rest being valuable than me being concerned about him being rusty.
Yeah, and we kind of saw it in the playoffs too, where like Sergei Bobrovsky, because he had lost his job over the course of the regular season last year, you know, had only played 40-ish games going into the postseason, and then we all know what happened. Aiden Hill had only played 30-ish games going into the playoffs last year, and we all know what happened. I mean, arrested Demko feels like a weapon for Vancouver. Connor McDavid may return Saturday versus the Canucks. So McDavid and Demko, their status both up in the air for Saturday. Will be fascinating to watch that play out. Demko said he won't go today. That's what he told reporters in Edmonton. I may go tomorrow, and then described himself as day-to-day. If you're not going tonight and may go tomorrow. does McDavid... Well, let me ask you this. The Canucks have beat the Oilers in all three meetings. In fact, the Oilers haven't taken a point from their previous three meetings with the Canucks, although I would argue that their demolition of Vancouver in the second game of the year might have represented like one of Vancouver's iffiest performances, not counting games against the Philadelphia Flyers all season long. And I'm curious to get your sense of this. Do you think the Oilers should care, not about the division, but just like about at least accounting for themselves, like at least getting a point, at least beating the Canucks once before they could potentially meet up again in the second round?
Yeah, I think there's some value in that. I will say, though, like what we've seen from this Oilers team, especially since the coaching change, but like the past, whatever, 40, 50 games,
is
much more representative, I think, of their ability than the version of them that we saw at the start of the year when they were losing a bunch of games and ultimately fire their coach. So particularly defensively, they've improved so much in that time. And so I don't necessarily think that what happened in those early season results, like it's obviously playing a big role in the standings right now and in this Pacific Division race, but in terms of how they'd feel about any sort of playoff matchup or them having the better of them, I don't think you can kind of almost throw that out the window.
The first three, yes. The Edmonton Oilers were 18 points back of the Canucks at Christmas, are now 4 points back with two games in hand and this head-to-head game remaining. There are big stakes for the Pacific Division crown this weekend. What's your view of this? Like, the Canucks have never won the Pacific Division, right? This franchise has won their division 10 times in 54 years. And I think like 8 of them are the Northwest, where it was like a joke. Like, no offense to, I'm not trying to besmirch the greatest golden era of Canucks franchise history. But
I think you should besmirch the state of that division at
the time. Well, we remember what the Avs looked like then, and the Wild looked like then, and the Oilers were basically crash test dummies for Sedin twin cycles for like a period of 5 or 6 years. It was beautiful. Now, in your view, I'm sure the Canucks, and they have been saying the right things. Like, yeah, we want to win it, but our ambitions are sort of grander and deeper. And mm-hmm. I think that's right. Like, yeah. I think it's one of those things that matters, but doesn't really matter. And I think we should appreciate it on sort of those lines. Your thoughts on the Canucks winning the division?
Well, can I just make one more Oilers point before I move on to this? Because I was just thinking about this. So the scheduling here is really interesting to me, because if McDavid doesn't play tonight, that game tomorrow night against the Canucks is the evening game, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, the Lightning will have their puck drop at 2:30 p.m. local time,
right,
with Nikita Kucherov at 98 assists. And so this idea that he could be the first one to get to 100 assists, assuming McDavid doesn't make his return until Saturday, after all the ink that's been spilled digitally about we need to make a bigger deal of McDavid getting to this 100-assist milestone, Kucherov will probably get there before him, which I do find very hilarious.
Who's the Lightning opponent?
They're playing the Capitals tomorrow at 2:30 p.m. He will almost certainly get 2 assists in that game.
You would think so.
Yes.
The Capitals are the fifth lowest scoring team in the NHL this year, which blew me away when I looked it up this morning. I can't believe that they may make the playoffs given that they've scored goals like they're Anaheim or Seattle.
Yeah, they played a game against Buffalo yesterday where the final shot count was 23-17, I believe. And that's been, like, I think even the game they played against Vancouver, both teams were in the low 20s. This has been sort of the way they're playing. It's like the lowest possible event hockey.
Zach Benson getting his 10th. Shout out to the Fraser Valley product. Mark Stone returns to practice. Let's discuss the LTI shenanigans aspect. Fans are mad.
Yes.
Mark Stone, for a second straight year, appears poised to re-enter the Vegas Golden Knights lineup for game one or maybe game two of the postseason. People are up in arms about this. Everyone knows my feeling about it. I think people are whiners. I think the fact of the matter is that the LTI system functionally does what it wants to, and any solutions that I've ever heard to fix it, people say stuff like the league could fix it if they wanted to, but A, it's collectively bargained, and B, all of the things that are like make the roster cap compliant in the playoffs betray a fundamental understanding of how the cap is accounted for and would ultimately result in just all sorts of unintended consequences that we don't want. You know, like, you don't want the Canucks in 2011 and Manny Malhotra working his way back after that devastating eye injury to return for the final. You don't want to get there and be like, sorry, Manny. We have to play a roster that is compliant on face value, despite that being not how the cap worked at any other point this season.
Right.
It's insane.
To be fair, we should note Vegas was under this idea cap compliant last year, though, right? Like, during their Stanley Cup final run.
They were.
Their lineup was cap compliant at them.
It was, because most of their overage stemmed from Robin Leonard. Now, this year, it would be a little different.
It'd be way over, yeah.
Well, I mean, 90. So currently, Cap Friendly has them at $92.2 million projected cap hit. Which includes obviously 8.75 million in LTI space used. Robin Leonard represents 5 million of that. They currently have both Carrier and Mark Stone, and then buying Hurdle really pushed their bill, right? So they really leaned into it this time in a way that they didn't last year when people were still crying foul about it because hockey fans love to complain. But I mean, for me anyway, the LTI thing, the cap circumvention stuff, I don't buy it. I think it's a lot of teams and a lot of fan bases, sort of pretending that there's a moral high ground, despite the fact that a wild amount of teams are using LTI. Like, just to put this in perspective for everybody, the Edmonton Oilers projected cap hit per cap friendly, 83.5. Well, that's $2 million over the upper limit. The Vancouver Canucks currently have Thatcher Demko on LTI and Tucker Pullman on LTI. 86.6 million. Vegas only 6 million north of the Canucks. Now, is 6 million somewhat significant?
That's a pretty good player.
It's a pretty good player. Yeah. But 5 million, like the vast majority, the bulk of that is Robin Leonard, right? So I just kind of look at this and think these are the rules as they were written. The system fundamentally works. We occasionally do see some things that make you roll your eyes. Patrick Kane, Alex Edler, Mark Stone, some of the most prominent examples in the past. And I just want to bring up one last point here, which is that Demko's injury occurred on March 9th, 2024. The NHL trade deadline was that Friday.
It was the 8th, yeah.
Yeah, it was the 8th. Was one day earlier. You're telling me that this Canucks management group, if Demko had been injured one game earlier, wouldn't have been willing to A, let him get his first rep game one of the playoffs instead of returning to get a couple toward the balance of the regular season, and wouldn't have then used turned around and, strongly considered using that cap space on Jason Zucker for free? I mean, come on. I think I'm pretty confident we are. That's breaks of the game stuff. That's not one team has a devastatingly immoral circumventing approach to managing the cap that needs to be stomped out at the expense of all sorts of other things. So anyway, that's my mini rant.
Well, what it does show you though is there's, I think, a problem right now with the way the NHL regular season is structured and weighed. Because the Golden Knights did get punished by not having Mark Stone.
Yeah.
They've been significantly worse.
They've been mid.
For 6 weeks now.
They're 3 points north.
They've fallen down the standings. They're still haven't clinched their spot. And so they've been punished. The issue, though, is that the competition around them is so weak that they can still get in, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is also when people want to expand the NHL postseason and get more teams in. I think we're at a good spot right now. I think, if anything, we have too many teams making it.
Well, see, but if you had a play-in, then Vegas's punishment in part for being without Mark Stone for these 2 months would be that they'd have to play a game 83 and potentially a game 84 to make sure that they were in the postseason, right? Like, True. They'd actually... for me, if you expanded the playoffs, there'd actually be some risk here with the fact that they'd have to beat Nashville or LA. And then, if they lost, beat St. Louis or Minnesota, so beat St. Louis, to actually make the postseason. To me, that would be, to me, adding a play-in sort of enhances the stakes for teams that try to sort of take advantage of the system like this. So anyway, I'm a firm believer that the LTI system works, that it does what it's designed to do. I think an awful lot of this whining about it is, honestly, I think it's just that. It's whinging of the highest order.
Well, and also, if you're not taking advantage of it right now, like, you should be mad at your organization for not doing so.
It'd be pretty cool to root for a team that just, like, adds Tomáš Hertl for funsies at the trade deadline. All right, let's move on to the next part of the whiteboard, which... is the broadsheet. I just want to talk about Hanifin here. So Hanifin signs an 8-year, $7.35 million contract with the Vegas Golden Knights. All of those are UFA years. What's your view on this? Does the Hanifin deal have any impact? Should it be seen to have any impact on Filip Hronek's valuation?
Yes.
The... reason I ask is I sort of see them as comparable guys. These are both guys who've played north of 23 minutes a night.
Yep.
They're both guys who I see as like credible top end guys, but if you're winning a cup, you probably have them slotted down on your second pair.
Yep.
You know, they're both guys who are, you know, between 0.45 and 0.55 points per game from the blue line, with Hronek having like narrowly a higher points per game clip than Hanifin. But Hanifin, I think we'd regard as the superior defensive player and obviously has more physical value given his size. So when you think about these two players, like, does the Hanifin deal set a floor for what Hronek's next contract looks like? And if that deal was the Canucks signing Hronek at that exact number, what would your reaction be?
It would be a bit rich, in my opinion, right? And I think it's a bit rich for Hanifin as well, because this year, the way he's produced has been a bit of an aberration, I think, compared to his historical norms. Now, I think he's a good bet to continue producing at this rate in his new environment, because he's such
on
a nice
PP1
fit
too.
For the way they play, the way they're using him. I think like his skating ability in that transition system as well, the way they utilize their defensemen, is going to flourish. And we've seen that so far in his first 15, 20 games of the team. So it makes a lot of sense in terms of that fit. But he's also a player who, even before this, was regarded, I think, much more highly in league circles than Hronek was, because of his draft pedigree, because of, I think, like his size. And I've made this argument, I think, sometimes like undeservingly, because of like just the way he looks in a uniform, you know, like, kind of like that Moneyball thing where it's like you just see him out there and you're like, with the hair flowing and just like how big he is. You're just like, all right, like this guy is very impressive, even before the numbers weren't there. And so I think that stuff buys you more cachet in league circles than I think like anything Hronek's really gotten at this point.
I feel like Hanifin's on a short list of guys we've argued about over the last few years, because I've always been a fan. I just like the mobility that he's brought in Vegas. Like, if you're looking to find a long-term Martinez upgrade, I think it's hard to do better than this.
No, certainly. I think it kind of not reset their clock, but it got them a lot younger. It basically got them another prime player. And this is something that the Golden Knights have been doing for a while now. It's like turning good players into better players who are like younger and consistently keep resetting the clock by a couple seasons. And so this is the way you need to operate if you're going to be a team like the Golden Knights are.
Well, and it's impressive that they've been able to do it without hurting their glue guy stable the way like LA,
right,
who tried to pull off something similar by landing Dubois, kind of did, right? Yeah. I mean, in some ways that team lost, I think, a gear. You know,
they lost the connective tissue.
They lost the connective tissue on their team that I think made them a little bit more formidable than they ultimately have been this season.
Mm.
It's an impressive trick. Lineup notes: Canucks went with a new look top six at practice yesterday. Pius Suter skating on the wing with JT Miller and Brock Besser. You know, everyone knows that makes me happy. That should be Vancouver's top line. Mikheyev with Pettersson and Hoglander.
Yep.
Lindholm between Garland and Joshua. Are the Canucks short a top nine player?
Well, they certainly are, particularly in the wing. I will say I really like Lindholm's game in the most recent one.
Yeah,
I know like some
awesome
of the underlying numbers
the
didn't necessarily affect that in terms of like game score or whatever, but I thought like he looked much more like this, especially like off the puck in terms of like a lot,
physical,
of course,
checking
stuff that I think the Canucks signed up for when they acquired him. And so that's a massive development, because it's almost gotten to the point where it's kind of like I'm viewing it as foul money in a sense, which is a bit depressing considering that was their big trade deadline acquisition. But it had gone so long without any dividends that now, just seeing that, I'm like, oh yeah, like this is a nice little addition for them.
I'd say this too. Garland and Joshua have had so much success and have so much chemistry,
right,
that they've been able to plug and play with Pius Suter, Teddy Bluger, JT Miller. And it's just kind of worked. Like, even when JT Miller was playing on that line, and we all know what JT Miller is capable of as like a guy who can drive results for a line, it felt like he was playing Teddy Bluger's game with that line. Like the way those, and that's not a, by the way, that's not like, I'm not trying to criticize Miller's performance. I'm just saying that line is so established in terms of how those wingers work off one another that it feels like the centers, you know, I don't want to say like along for the ride, but is kind of just filling in. And if you're able to play a solid, assertive, physical checking game away from the puck to help them control play, win some draws, and then just find some quiet ice, like Garland's going to find you from down low.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a chance that that's a really interesting fit, and I'm really excited to see how that line complements one
another. No, well, Garland's going to do so much of the transitional and puck carrying work, and then the two of those guys in Garland and Joshua have that two-man game where they're constantly looking for each other. So they're going to have that passing, which you're right. Like, Lindholm has historically been a good player at finding soft spots, particularly in the slot, and then shooting off those situations. And so I really like that fit, and I want to see more of it moving forward.
Unfortunately, it comes at the cost of Mikheyev up with Pettersson and Hoglander. And It's just that's tough for me, man.
Yeah.
I like the player. His skating has looked a little bit better. He's moved the puck a little bit better, but we all know where the finish is. Well, we all know the finish is not there.
Yeah, where it is, and it's not there.
Playoff odds. Canucks, 54% likely to win the Pacific. Oilers at 46% going into tonight's game between the Coyotes and the Oilers at Rogers Place in Edmonton. The Canucks' most likely opponent is now Los Angeles at 41% on the idea that the Oilers are at least 46% likely to pass the Canucks. Nashville at 38%. And Vegas, we can imply at 21%. We'll see. Like, this is going to be a weekend. It's such an interesting one because on the one hand, we could wake up on Sunday morning and this could be extremely interesting.
Yep.
Or Edmonton loses tonight and the Canucks clinch on Saturday. And it's like, well, that was weird. Why did we even talk about that? So it's one that's going to, you know, it's going to come down to it right now.
Well, apologies to your travel schedule, but Nashville's clearly the most interesting matchup from like a pure series entertainment perspective, which means we're probably not going to get it. And it's going to be 7 games of Canucks Kings.
Yep. That sounds about right. Okay. Gambling odds, Oilers minus 280 home favorites against the Coyotes tonight, despite McDavid's absence.
That seems too low.
You think that's too low? You value on the Oilers at plus 280?
I mean, at what point, if you were to bet hockey, would you feel comfortable being like, you know what, I'm in on the Coyotes tonight?
Well, so the Coyotes are priced at plus 230 as road underdogs, and I just want to put this out there for our listeners. I'm headed to Edmonton right after our show to cover this big, decisive, 4-point game that could decide the Pacific Division crown on Saturday night. Saturday night on Hockey Night in Canada. Oilers, Canucks. Which means take it to the bank. The Oilers are losing tonight.
Yeah. Well, you're gonna be there to watch the Canucks
clinch the Pacific. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to tell myself. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the stakes are lower. That'll do it for the whiteboard. We'll be back after the break to discuss Vancouver's form over the last 30 and sort of do some season wrap-up stuff with Dimitri. There's some big topics I want to pick his brain on. You're listening to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.